Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Genesis chapter 35, first 15 verses. And in this section, God will confirm his renaming of Jacob, which he had done at the river Jabbok. After wrestling with Jacob, he named him Israel. He's going to reconfirm that name change in these 15 verses. We're going to see Jacob moving from Shechem to Bethel. Our context is this. In Genesis 34, verses 21 through 31, we had Dinah, who was the 11 patriarchs' sister. Leah's daughter Dinah was raped by Shechem up there in the city of Shechem. And as a result, Simeon and Levi, probably with the help of the other brothers, wiped the Shechemites out. And so I guess it's time to leave. So Jacob is getting ready to go down to Bethel, the same Bethel that he took out to Syria from when he had the vision of Jacob's ladder. So that's our context. Now we start in verse 1 of Genesis 35. Then God said to Jacob, "Arise, go up to Bethel and live there, and make an altar there to God, who appeared to you when you fled from your brother Esau." Now, whenever it says God said, our options are, did he use a dream? Did he use a vision? Did he use some kind of an impulse in Jacob's mind? Did he use an articulate voice? Or did he appear as the second person of the Trinity, Jesus, in human form? We don't know. But somehow God said to Jacob, "Let's go, Jacob, go up to Bethel." Now, Gill speculates that Jacob had been at Shechem for about 9 or 10 years yet. 9 or 10 years or so. But he had not yet fulfilled his vow at Bethel. What vow was that? Well, that the pillar at Bethel would be God's house. Remember, 20 years earlier, before when Jacob was run out of Canaan, run out of Beersheba by Esau, because Esau hated him because Jacob had stolen Esau's birthright. On his way out to Syria, Jacob stopped at Bethel. Bethel being just a few miles north of Jerusalem, in a straight line due north. Genesis 28:22 says this, or Jacob says this, "This stone which I have set up as a pillar will be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you." From there, we can speculate that Jacob is planning to set up a temple, if you will, God's house, and he's going to give a tenth of his wealth to support that house. John Gill assumes that this tenth has not been paid yet here in chapter 35 as Jacob appears ready to leave Shechem. That tenth has not been paid yet, and so God is saying, okay, let's go down to Bethel and finish what you promised. Now, why had Jacob not gone down to Bethel, set up that God's house at the pillar memorial that he had set up? And why had he not given a tenth to support that house? Why had he not done that? Well, John Gill speculates, here's one option, that Jacob was just forgetful and neglectful. And if that were true, perhaps Jacob was chastised by the affair of Dinah, which was a disaster. He had become odious in the nostrils of the Shechemites, whose males had all been slaughtered by Jacob's sons. And if that's the case, then that certainly got him back to Bethel fast enough. God told him to leave. He was probably ready to leave anyway. But John Gill says, he doesn't think that Jacob was neglectful and forgetful about setting up that house of God in Bethel, that temple of God, because a good man like Jacob's not likely to forget such a promise. I don't know. How often do we forget our promises to God until trouble hits? My speculation is he just was happy in Shechem and he just too much trouble to go down there and fulfill his vow to God. Everything's cool now. How often does prosperity make us forget God? I mean, that's just human nature, sort of. Well, that's one option, that he didn't go because he was forgetful and neglectful. But another option is he just hadn't had an opportunity yet to go. He was too busy with his flocks. Well, I don't know. Maybe he was waiting for a divine order, which he has now. I don't know about that. I just think he was probably forgetful. He just was a little bit lazy about it. That's my opinion. We don't know. So Jacob goes up to Bethel. Now, that's south. A lot of times we think up is north on the map, but this is south. Shechem is in a valley where Jacob is now. It's between Mount Ebal in the north, where the curses came from, and Mount Gerizim in the south, where the blessings were read of the law later on, about 400 years later. But it's in a valley, and Bethel is up in the hill country. If you look at the map, you'll see that. Bethel is in an area in the atlas.org map, an area that is called hill country, and you can see on the topographical map the hill. So he was going up to Bethel. It was about 30 miles south of Shechem, on an ascent from the lowland to the highland. And he's going, and God says, "Go there, make an altar to me the God who appeared to you when you fled from your brother Esau. Well, that was 20 years or over 20 years earlier. When Jacob fled from Esau because Esau was trying to kill him because Jacob had stolen Esau's birthright. We read about this in Genesis 28:13, the appearance of God the first time at Bethel. This is the story of Jacob's ladder. And behold, the Lord stood above it. Genesis 28:13. And behold, the Lord stood above it, that is, above Jacob's ladder, and said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give it to you and to your descendants. That's one more repetition of the land promise, which shows up everywhere. So we go now to verses 2 through 5 in Genesis 35. So Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, put away the foreign gods which are among you, and purify yourselves, and change your garments, and let us arise and go to Bethel, and I will make an altar there to God, who answered me in the day of my distress, and has been with me wherever I have gone. So they gave to Jacob all the foreign gods which they had, and the rings which were in their ears, and Jacob hid them under the oak which was near Shechem. As they journeyed, there was a great terror upon the cities which were around them, and they did not pursue the sons of Jacob. Now verse 2 says, Jacob said to his household, that would be his wives and children, and all who were with him, that would be his men servants and maid servants, as Gil says. Now sometimes you see the word household and it includes servants, apparently not here, it was split out. Put away the foreign gods, well here's some options as to who those foreign gods were. Remember Laban's teraphim, which Rachel had stolen from her brother Laban? Excuse me, her father, Laban. John Gill says, it's probably not those teraphim. They likely would not have been retained so long in Jacob's family. Option number 2, they were the gods that belonged to the Canaanite servants who were hired by Jacob's family. Option number 3 is they were the Canaanite gods that belonged to the captives of Shechem. Remember, the males in Shechem were killed in the Rape of Dinah affair, but the little children and the wives of the males were taken as slaves, and so they could have had their gods with them as they were living with the Israelites in the Shechem area. Option number 4, who were these gods? Well, it could be the gods that belonged to Jacob's sons and daughter Dinah. Who knows? You know, they might have assimilated a little bit. I mean, after all, Rachel took foreign gods out of Haran to start with. This is even though she had lived with Jacob for a while. She still had a little bit of paganism in her. Maybe the sons and daughters still had some paganism in them. We don't know, but maybe it was all 4 of these, or a combination of 2 or 3 of these sources of where these gods came from. But Jacob said, get rid of them, guys. We're going to purify ourselves. He apparently has felt like he had backslid a little bit. Now he's going to get closer to God, get rid of some idols, which, of course, is a great topology for us, is it not? He tells all of his household, his relatives, his wives, his children, his servants, to purify themselves. Now, here's a couple of options as to what does that mean. Could mean abstaining from sexual relationships with their wives. As John Gill suggests, I don't think so, because it talks about changing your garments. Could be washing their bodies to ritually clean themselves, especially since the brothers' hands were full of the blood of the Shechemites. Or it could be just to cleanse themselves from idolatry in general, which I think is more probably what it was. This, of course, is before the law. In the law, ritual cleansing, ablutions, were all through the law. Also, abstaining from sex, too, was in there, too. But we're going to assume it's just washing yourselves, because washing is a perfect symbol of purity, washing the dirt away, changing your garments, put on some clean clothes, change. John Gill says this is symbolic of the renewing of the mind and the cleansing of the soul. Change your garments. Now in verse 3, after Jacob says, let's go to Bethel, he says, I'm going to make an altar to God who answered me in the day of my distress. What distress is Jacob talking about? Well, he's been distressed several times. Once, when he fled from Esau at the beginning of his 20-year exile in Padan Aram, because Esau was trying to kill him because Jacob stole his birthright. Well, that was distressful. He left with no money, running for his life. And then after he'd been in Padan Aram for 20 years, he's running from Laban, trying to get out of Syria back to the Canaan land. He's running for his life. Laban caught up with him at the river Jabbok, and that was a touch-and-go situation. Until God gave Laban a dream and said, let him alone. Jacob, after these experiences, know that God has been with him wherever he has gone, as he says in verse 3. That with me phrase is instructive. When God is with you, who can be against you? God had promised Jacob that at the first appearance of Bethel on his way out to Syria. Genesis 28:15, behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I've done what I have promised you. And so God is with Jacob the whole way, before and after his exile to Syria. This being with you, this promise of God to be with somebody, is a common promise in Scripture. Genesis 26:24, the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, I am the God of your father Abraham. This is Isaac. Do not fear, for I am with you. I will bless you and multiply your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham. Genesis 28:15, this is God appearing to Jacob and saying he's going to be with Jacob. We just mentioned this. This is at Bethel. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. Also to Jacob, this is God appearing to Jacob while he's in Syria. And the Lord, when Jacob realized Laban's not so happy with him anymore, the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. Later on, Joshua 1:5, no man will able to be stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Isaiah 41:10, do not fear, for I am with you. This you is the nation of Israel, for I am with you, nation of Israel. Do not anxiously look about you, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Jeremiah 1:8, do not be afraid of them, the enemies of Jeremiah and Israel, for I am with you, Jeremiah, to deliver you. Jeremiah 1:19, they will fight against you, but they will not overcome you, for I am with you to deliver you, Jeremiah, declares the Lord. So the Lord was with Jeremiah too. How about the disciples in the New Testament? Matthew 28:20, right before the Great Commission. Teaching them to observe all that I command you, the nations. Teach the nations to observe all that I commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age, end of the Jewish age. So as long as the disciples were alive, Jesus was with them as they went out and spread the gospel. Acts 18, for I am with you. God, Jesus tells Paul at Corinth, I am with you, and no man will attack you in order to harm you. Corinth on the second journey, I am with you. So, yes, if God is with us, who can be against us? If God is for us, who can be against us? As Paul says in another place. It's not bad to have the God who created the universe looking out for you. And Jacob understands that the reason he survived this far is because of God. And I want to tell you, this is the perfect application for Christians today. If you've been a Christian for a long time, like I have, over 60 years, and you look back and you say, oh my gosh, how many times could I have gone down and been destroyed? Except that God was with me. He never left me. He was always with me. Even when it didn't look like he was with me, he was with me. That, my friends, will preach, as they say. Verse 4 says that the household and all who were with him, all of Jacob's retinue, gave to Jacob all the foreign gods which they had and the rings which were in their ears. Well, why did he give Jacob their rings? That's just cosmetic, is it not? It's just jewelry? No, it's not just that. So the NIV Study Bible says these rings were worn as amulets and charms as a pagan religious custom. So it was just one more example of paganism going into the ground. They buried these gods and these rings beneath an oak tree which was near Shechem. Well, you know, the oak which was near Shechem, that ought to ring a bell. It was obviously a well-known tree because it's the oak. Maybe it's, and I think it probably is, the great tree mentioned in Genesis 12:6. Abram passed through the land as far as the site of Shechem. Remember, that's where Abram first entered into the promised land. That was his port of entry. As he left Haran in Syria, he landed at Shechem. He passed through the land as far as the site of Shechem to the oak of Moreh. Now, that's not the oak of Mamre at Hebron. This is the oak of Moreh in Shechem. So I'm assuming that's where all the idols were buried, although it could be a different oak. There was a famous pagan sanctuary at Shechem, and a large oak tree was often conspicuous at such pagan places. And this is not necessarily the same as the oak of Moreh, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was the same. When it says oak, that is also sometimes translated as a terebinth tree. Jameson Fawcett and Brown say that that tree is very common in Palestine. It was remarkable for its widespreading branched and dark green foliage. Well, we're going to assume it's the oak of Moreh. Who was Moreh? He was, according to Easton's dictionary, he was a Canaanite probably who inhabited the district south of Shechem between Mounts Ebal and Gerizim. And that's not really helped too much. But so it was the oak probably belonging to a particular person named Moreh. So that's where we're going to assume either that tree or another oak tree, all the idols of Canaan that were in Jacob's family were buried. Why bury them? To bury gods at the root guaranteed that no one would dig them up and use them again at the root of that oak tree. Why? Because the oak was consecrated to idolatry. Nobody's going to disturb an oak consecrated to idolatry. So these idolatrous symbols were put out of commission, out of use. Now, verse 5 says that as they prepared to go, and as they went, as they journeyed, there was a great terror upon the cities which were around them, and they did not pursue the sons of Jacob. Well, where did that terror come from? Well, probably because the sons of Jacob had wiped out all the Shechemites and killed them after they deceived them into getting circumcised so they could make some kind of an alliance with them. Boy, that was dirty. That was really dirty. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown has another take on it. They say that it could be that the Shechemite neighbors might not have been afraid of the Israelites, but they might have been ready to get vengeance on the Israelites for what they had done, and that God had to protect the Israelites as they left because God was with Jacob. I don't think so. I think it's easier to say that the Shechemites were afraid of Jacob's son because what they had done. They were wealthy, and they were powerful, and they were nasty. Genesis 35, verses 6 and 7. So Jacob came to Luz, that is Bethel, which is in the land of Canaan, he and all the people who were with him. He built an altar there and called the place El Bethel, because there God had revealed himself to him when he fled from his brother. He came to Luz, that's the former name of Bethel, as we read in Genesis 28:19, when Jacob was on his way to Syria over 20 years earlier. He, Jacob, called the name of that place Bethel, which means house of God. However, previously the name of the city had been Luz. Now, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown speculate that the timing is this way. Bethel was probably an empty place when Jacob's ladder dream, when Jacob had his dream of Jacob's ladder. And then as years go by, Jacob leaves for 20 years and comes back to Shechem, goes to Syria for 20 years and goes back to Shechem. And during that time, the Canaanites built a town there called Luz, which they used. And naturally, their name would supersede the name Bethel, because Bethel was only known to Jacob and his family. So that's why it was called Luz when they got down there. Well, that could be. Luz means almond, by the way. It's called Luz in the land of Canaan. That was necessary to distinguish it from another Luz, which was in the land of the Hittites, Judges 1:26. The man went into the land of the Hittites and built a city and named it Luz, which is its name to this day. Of course, the Hittites were in Turkey, western Syria. I don't know where that Luz was. Maybe when we get to Judges 1:26, I'll look it up. Now, Jacob built an altar there in Bethel, as he was told in verse 1, which we've just read, Genesis 35:1. God said to Jacob, get up, go to Bethel and settle there, build an altar there to God. It's not just going to Bethel. He was supposed to go to Bethel and build an altar there. Fulfill your promises, Jacob. Remember, he had promised to build a house of God there, which would include an altar, I assume, on the first trip to Bethel in Genesis 28. So God's encouraging him, finish what you promised. Now Jacob went down there and built and called the place El Bethel, which means the God of the house of God. Bethel means house of God, and El means God. So El Bethel means the God of the house of God. It seems a little repetitious, but that's what he did. Now we go to verse 8, Genesis 35. Now Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died, and she was buried below Bethel under the oak. It was named Alon Bakuth. Now Deborah was not Rachel's nurse. She was Rebekah's nurse. Rebekah is Jacob's mother. So Jacob's mother's nurse was with Jacob there in Bethel, where she was died and buried. Deborah, whose name means bee, she was the nurse of Rebekah, which we can discover from Genesis 24, verses 58 and 59. They, that would be Laban and Rebekah's mother, Laban, Rebekah's sister, and Rebekah's mother, along with Laban, called Rebekah and said to her, will you go with this man, Abraham's servant, who had come to look for a wife for Isaac? She replied, I will go to Canaan. So they sent away their sister Rebekah. Laban and Rebekah's mother sent away their sister Rebekah with the one who had nursed and raised her, and Abraham's servant and his men. The one who had nursed and raised her, we assume, was Deborah. It's probably Deborah. It doesn't say so explicitly. Adam Clark says, it seems that there are many that are greatly puzzled how she ended up in Jacob's family. Because remember now, Deborah was Rebekah's nurse, not Rachel's nurse. And so it seems kind of strange that she would end up in Jacob's family. Well, I don't know. She could have been given to Jacob's family by Rebekah, although that might seem kind of strange since she was a lifelong nurse. It could be that she wasn't even in Jacob's family. She just happened to be in Bethel, and Jacob's family happened to be there when she died, as Adam Clark says, which is a possibility. It is a sort of a unusual thing, but it's not. Lots of unusual things happen in life. It doesn't mean that it's anywhere near impossible. She was buried under the oak, which indicates it was probably a well-known tree at Bethel. Might have been the oak that was mentioned in 1 Samuel 10:3. Then you will go on further from there, and you will come as far as the oak of Tabor. And there three men going up to God at Bethel will meet you, one carrying three young goats, another carrying three loaves of bread, another carrying a jug of wine. Sorry, so there's an oak of Tabor, which is mentioned near Bethel in 1 Samuel 10. That's just a speculation. Now, we need to distinguish some famous oaks. I have a fantasy that I'm dreaming, and in my dream, I'm playing Bible trivia, and the question is, tell us what the most three famous oaks in the Old Testament were in the book of Genesis. And I would say, the oak at Shechem was called the oak of Moreh. The oak at Hebron, where Abraham lived much of his life, was the oak of Mamre, where the tombs of the patriarchs were. And then there's an oak at Bethel, which is called Alon Bakuth, the oak of weeping, because they were weeping because Deborah had died. That's pretty cool. Got an oak that's named after a servant's death. Not like she was a big shot in the line of succession. She was just a servant, but she was well-loved, lifelong nurse in the family. We go down to Genesis 35, 9 and 10. Then God appeared to Jacob again when he came from Padan Aram, and he blessed him. God said to him, your name is Jacob. You shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel shall be your name. Thus he called him Israel. Now this verse is a little confusing. Verse 9 sounds like when he came from Padan Aram. Well, that was what, 9 or 10 earlier years earlier when he had showed up at the river Jabbok at Mahanaim, the camp of two rivers, or the double camp, excuse me, and then he went west about 5 miles to Succoth, then he crossed the Jordan River and went to Shechem, where he'd been living for a while. Well, that's all what's being referred to here, I'm sure. God appeared to Jacob again after he'd come back from Padan Aram, after spending 20 years in service to Laban. And I'm assuming that he's already made it to Bethel, because we've just been talking about that in the previous verses. So God appeared to Jacob again when he's at Bethel. He blessed him. Now, this appearance of God previously appeared to Jacob at the river Jabbok when he wrestled with him, you remember? He appeared with him at Shechem, as we just read in verse 1, to get out of Shechem and go to Bethel. He also appeared with him in the first trip to Bethel on the way out of, away from Beersheba, away from Canaan land. God appeared to him in the famous dream of Jacob's ladder. He also, once he was in Syria, Padan Aram, and God had told him, hey, it's time to get out, time to go back to the Canaan land. This is when Laban was getting upset with Jacob. But then God appeared to him again then. So God was always appearing to Jacob at moments of crisis. So God appears to Jacob again here at Bethel the second time. And he basically confirmed the earlier blessings. Says he blessed him. That would be land, offspring, and blessing, I'm sure. Adam Clark says that some people like to say that Jacob's faith, like his father Isaac's faith, was weak, so promises needed to be confirmed. But Abraham didn't need any confirmation. One word was sufficient to him. For example, when Abraham was getting told to circumcise all the males in his household, he did it the very next day when the sun was up. He had the revelation at night. The very next day the sun was up, and he says, circumcise them, get the knives out. But Jacob, his life was not quite so stable, shall we say, and he needed some confirmation to keep him going. Well, that's a reasonable speculation. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's reasonable. Now, this name change, by the way, he'd already had his name changed at the River Jabbok during the wrestling match with Jesus with the angel of the Lord. I'll read that for you. Genesis 32, verse 28. He, that's God, or the angel of the Lord, said, your name should no longer be Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Israel means struggle with God. And so that's when his name was changed. The change of his name is here confirmed at Bethel the second time at Bethel. So this is not the first time his name's been changed from Jacob to Israel. Now this, and of course, Jacob means deceiver. So big name change, Jacob deceiver to struggles with God. Struggles with God for what? For a blessing. A blessing which he got at the cost of being wounded in his flesh. He quit striving, quit trying to deceive, quit trying to trick, quit trying to do God's work for him. Just limp around in your flesh, be weak in your flesh, and then God will give you land, offspring, and blessings, and he will confirm his promises to you. Now that name change from Jacob to Israel, that has affected history really, because today, even today, Jews are called Israel. He struggles with God. And I think of the modern day Israelites, they're struggling with God for a blessing today. They don't get it because they haven't been wounded in their flesh. They haven't realized that they cannot get blessings from God by doing good things to keeping God's law. They have to get good things from Jesus because of his grace, not because of the Jews' works. They're still struggling with God for a blessing. Israel struggles with God. We go now to Genesis 35, verses 11, 12, and 13. God also said to Jacob, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall come from you, and kings shall come forth from you. The land which I gave to Abraham and Isaac, I will give it to you, and I will give the land to your descendants after you. Then God went up from him to the place where he had spoken with him. So God tells Jacob, be fruitful and multiply. God loves to tell his chosen people to be fruitful and multiply. Here's some examples. This is with Adam and Eve. God blessed them. God blessed Adam and Eve. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. Now, how about Noah after the ark? Genesis 9:1. And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Drop down 6 verses in Genesis 9. As for you, be fruitful and multiply. God tells Noah, populate the earth abundantly and multiply in it. So there's 2 famous people who were told to be fruitful and multiply, Adam and Noah. Let's look at some fulfillment of that promise physically, where physical Israelites were fruitful and multiplied. Genesis 47:27, now Israel lived in the land of Egypt and Goshen, and they acquired property in it and were fruitful and became very numerous. In other words, they were fruitful and had multiplied. Exodus 1:7, but the sons of Israel were fruitful and increased greatly and multiplied and became exceedingly mighty, so that the land was filled with them. So the promise was physically fulfilled. Now, of course, the more important fulfillment is the spiritual seed of Abraham was fruitful and multiplied, the church. And you know, as Paul in Romans 4, Genesis, and in Galatians talks about, we're all children of Abraham, who Abraham believed and was reckoned to him as righteousness, and now we as Gentiles, if we believe and reckon to him as righteousness, we get saved, we become part of the people of God, we become descendants of Abraham, we become children of Abraham, and we are then said to be fruitful and multiply because we fill the earth as the waters cover the sea. The church is all over the world today. The church is supposed to be fruitful and multiply. The spiritual seed of Abraham is supposed to be supposed to be fruitful and multiply. Now, this land promise, he says, the land which I gave to Abraham and Isaac. I could go back and repeat all those land promises to you. I think it's Genesis 12, Genesis 15, Genesis 17, and Isaac. And also, Abraham took Isaac up, where was that? Genesis 22. I'm going from memory here. The land promise is repeated over and over and over again in the Old Testament scriptures, and it's repeated here to Jacob. So we know that the land promise was given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But again, the ultimate purpose of the land promise. Remember, Abraham went out to the land, but he was not seeking for a city which had foundations. He was seeking for a city, a heavenly city. So the land was a type of the kingdom of God, and that's how what we should look at today. But you read the Old Testament, it's always the physical land, 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 land that is mentioned, because God needed to have a land for the Messiah to be born in and to be a type of the spiritual blessings of the kingdom as we enter into the rest of God. So God went up, it says, went up from Jacob at Bethel. What does that mean, to go up? John Gill says, well, it could be the Shekinah glory of God ascended, or it could have been the Son of God in a visible form, Jesus having executed a theophany there. Jesus in a visible form in his physical body could have ascended on up. But whatever it was, Adam Clark says, this shows this was not a vision, this was not a strong mental impression, but that God actually appeared to Jacob. Maybe. I don't know. We can go now to verses 14 and 15, Genesis 35, and we'll finish up this audio. Jacob set up a pillar in the place where he had spoken with him, that's Bethel, a pillar of stone, and he poured out a drink offering on it. He also poured oil on it. So Jacob named the place where God had spoken with him Bethel. He had already named it that, actually, Bethel. So it probably should be, so Jacob had named the place where God had spoken with him Bethel. Now, what was this pillar? This is Bethel number 2 now, the second visit to Bethel. That pillar could have been the same pillar that Jacob had set up at Bethel number 1 when he stopped at Bethel on the way out 20 plus years earlier. We read that in Genesis 28, verse 18. So Jacob rose early in the morning and took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on its top. Well, but Gill says it's unlikely it's the same pillar. By now, the pagan Canaanites had probably destroyed Jacob's original pillar, and the pillar had probably fallen to ruin. So this is a new pillar of stone. Doesn't make any difference. It's just an interesting detail. So Jacob pours oil on it. That was common. A drink offering on it. That was common too. That's how the pagans did that in the ancient Near East. It was afterwards very common in all countries. as the NIV Study Bible and Adam Clark say. The wine was a little different, the drink offering on it. The first trip to Bethel, 20-plus years earlier, Jacob had poured oil on the pillar, but not wine is not mentioned. Genesis 28:18. So Jacob rose early in the morning and took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on its top. Now, why pagans did that, I don't know. But we know oil eventually became a symbol of the Holy Spirit, so it's closely connected with God. Verse 15, Genesis 35, so Jacob named the place where God had spoken with him Bethel. He reconfirms the name he had early given Bethel. The pagans had named the place Luz. He says, nope, we're going to call it Bethel, the house of God. So Jacob has now fulfilled his promises. We are finished now with Genesis chapter 35, verses 1 through 15. That prepares us for our next audio, which will cover Genesis 35, verses 16 through 29, in which we will read about the deaths of Rachel and Isaac. I hope you stay tuned for that audio. I hope you enjoyed this one.